Hello, and thanks for listening to the Ordinary Philosophy Podcast. Here, you can listen to interviews and audio renditions of pieces published at Ordinary Philosophy's website, dedicated to philosophy in the public square and the history of ideas that change the world. For more about Ordinary Philosophy, to see the photographs and sources and inspiration for each piece, please visit ordinaryphilosophy.com. Ordinary Philosophy's website and podcast are independent and ad-free, and depend on support from patrons and listeners like you. To find out more about how you can contribute to Ordinary Philosophy, please visit the Subscribe, Submit, and Support page today. And if you enjoy what you read and hear at Ordinary Philosophy, please share with those you believe will enjoy it too, and take a moment to rate and review this podcast on iTunes. I'm Amy Cools, creator and editor of Ordinary Philosophy. There's something a little unusual about the numbering of this episode. I've recorded episode 72, 73, and 74 in preparation for publishing them over the next few weeks, but there's something that happened just recently that's very momentous to me, and I wanted to share it with you right away, so it's numbered out of order. This is episode 75. Goodbye, dear Leonard Cohen. I've been listening to all the dissension. I've been listening to all the pain. And I feel that no matter what I do for you, it's gonna come back again. But I think that I can heal it. But I think that I can heal it. I'm a fool, but I think that I can heal it with this song. Minute Prologue by Leonard Cohen for Live Songs, 1973. I heard of Leonard Cohen's death when I returned home from work yesterday evening. Thursdays are my long days at the doctor's office, and by the time I left, we had cared for about 60 patients, and I had just enough time on my short break to do a little reading and quickly tuck a little lunch away. No time for social media or news, and no interest in them either. I was weary from election coverage and its aftermath. So I learned of his death not from the cold glow of a screen, but from the living face of my husband Brian, who is also one of my oldest friends. We've sung Cohen's songs together countless times over the years as Brian played guitar, or a cappella while driving, which I especially love to do. Brian had his guitar out, in fact, likely expecting I would want to sing his songs together at that moment. But after feeling stunned and, for some reason, well, what I can best describe as wounded, after a few moments I felt the urgent need to go out to a place where people gather. I felt that being in the presence of warm, vibrant life might prevent me from sinking back into the glum pessimism that had overshadowed my last 2 days, a mood so at odds with Cohen's own life and spirit. We went to Cato's, a favorite gastropub on Piedmont Avenue in Oakland, where the lights glow warmly, the food and beer are very good, the wooden tables are deeply carved with graffiti, there's often live music, and always a pervasive sense of neighborly camaraderie. Just one friend, it turned out, was free to meet us on such short notice, and we passed a happy evening, talking about the arts, mostly music and film, politics, and work. And we talked about Cohen, his wisdom and his humor, and his life and his poetry, about what his music meant to us and did for us, and we swapped favorite songs, my own of which I'll share with you in the written version of this story on the Ordinary Philosophy Podcast. And we talked about how we came to know Cohen's work. For me, it was from a guy whose name, I think, is Brad. Certainly it begins with a B. I worked with him a very long time ago at a vintage clothing store. I think I was 18 or 19 at the time. He usually wore rather close-fitting plain t-shirts with plaid shorts from the 1960s and early 1970s, of modest cotton, wool blend, or polyester, and had little round glasses. I loved his style. He was tall, blonde, had good taste in everything, and was a linguistics major. Brad put on 1975's The Best of Leonard Cohen, a collection for which Cohen picked the songs, wrote wonderful liner notes, and designed the packaging. I was stunned at what I heard, and very soon afterward bought several albums on tape. I wore them out, especially in the little boombox I kept with me. It served as my car stereo from the back seat of my little old hatchback. In Southern California, you can't get much of anywhere without driving, especially then. So I spent a lot of time in that car listening to music, especially Cohen's at that time. Sometimes rapt in attention, sometimes singing along. Sometime in 1996 or 97, I learned that Cohen was living at Mount Baldy's Zen Center and that he would often visit the village, the artsy little town center of nearby Claremont. So, being the ardent fangirl that I was, I began to hang out in the village even more often than I had been, hoping I would find an opportunity to meet him. With its folk music center, which, by the way, was founded by Ben Harper's grandparents, Rhino Records, one of the very best music stores ever, funky little stores, coffee shops, live music, and nearby drum circles at one of Claremont's many colleges, I've forgotten now which one, the village was already one of this then-hippie girl's regular haunts. But, alas, that meeting was never to occur, not even a chance sighting from afar. I'm quite sure I purchased my copy of I'm Your Fan at Rhino Records. This 1991 Cohen tribute album features prominently in Malcolm Gladwell's discussion of the history and evolution of one of Cohen's masterpieces, the majestic Hallelujah, in a recent Revisionist History podcast episode. I must admit, I experienced a moment of music nerd self-congratulation when Gladwell speaks of being one of the enlightened few who bought this album. Anyway, it has some good covers on it. Jeffrey Oryema does a lovely performance of Suzanne, the Pixies rock I Can't Forget. R.E.M. and David McComb with Adam Peters are true to the urban decay spirit of First We Take Manhattan and the self-deprecating, odd creepiness of Don't Go Home With Your Heart On, respectively. Dead Famous People do a sweetly poppy take on True Love Leaves No Traces, and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds recast the reflective Tower of Song into a raucous tour of musical styles. I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. Remains one of the sneakiest, funniest witticisms I've ever heard in a song. But best of all, John Cale's glorious version of Hallelujah wraps up the album. I very much recommend you listen to Gladwell's telling of the story of how Cale came to create the definitive version of Hallelujah, which, in turn, became one of the most covered and most loved songs in popular music. And you'll likely learn some other nice little music history tidbits you didn't know as well. Thanks, Malcolm Gladwell. I did finally get to see Leonard Cohen in the flesh, in concert at Oakland's Paramount Theater on Monday, April 13th, 2009. How lucky I felt that I would get to see him perform for the first time at one of my favorite theaters, a gorgeous Art Deco temple to the arts, its golden green interior replete with sleekly ornate, stylized figures of animals and humans, real, mythological, and archetypal. Cohen sang, danced, told stories, kneeled, then stood, then kneeled again, very like we used to do at Mass, and gesticulated for 2.5 hours. I marveled at his vigor while I was transported by his beautiful performance, and I thrilled and smiled throughout, here and there, weeping just a little. If you've listened to this, thank you for allowing me to share the story with you. And if you listened to it all the way through, you likely loved Leonard Cohen as well. I would love for you to share your stories and favorite Leonard Cohen songs, poems, and other things on the website at ordinaryphilosophy.com, on the Facebook page, on Twitter, by email, any way you like. Anyway, thanks for listening, and here's to you, Leonard Cohen. Sincerely, A. Cools.